Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
And my name is Jamie Loftus.
Oh, what I should have said is, hello, welcome to the birds of...
No.
No, there's nothing there.
I think you got it right the first time.
Bergdell.
Oh, Bergdell.
Bergdell cast.
Do birds... Are there... This is maybe... Oh, okay. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself in terms of brilliant discourse, but is there a single bird in this movie? Do you see a bird?
Isn't Black Canary a bird?
But do you, like, see a physical bird?
Oh.
I don't think you actually see a real... bird.
No pigeons?
Not even a pigeon. I feel like in most movies that don't have birds in the title, you get a pigeon. I'm already coming out with some really brilliant takes that I guess be remembered.
I'd have to like go back and rewatch Birdman, a thing I never want to do. So maybe I won't.
There's definitely birds in Birdman, unfortunately. I was watching this movie as if I was my dad, and I was like, didn't see a single bird.
No. Pretty birds. Good. Could have done with more birds.
They could have thrown in a bird, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this is the Birds of Prey episode.
Yes. So if you're not familiar with the show, we are a movie podcast that examines the treatment and representation of women in film, and we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point. Jamie, what on earth is the Bechdel test?
Well, I can tell you what it is. It's a media metric invented by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, that requires for our purposes that... there be two female identified characters in a piece of media with names who talk to each other about something other than a man. Most movies don't pass it. I think movies are starting to pass it more, but not because people regard women better, but because they don't want to get canceled.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that's where we start from.
Well, first we start with birds, and then are there any birds in the movie?
Yeah.
Then we use the Bechdel test to start the discussion.
Right.
But if it's failed the bird test, then it's kind of really not worth going into the Bechdel test after right? that. The movie is probably trash. So.
I'd like to see that Venn diagram of how many movies pass the bird test, which is a test that requires a movie have a bird, versus how... I bet more movies pass the bird test than the Bechdel test.
Oh, that's an interesting... I'll keep my eye out for that.
Someone write their thesis.
Does the bird have to be in focus? Does the bird have to be in the foreground?
For the purposes of the bird test, we need to feel that the bird is being represented in focus.
There's different caveats for the bird test. Sometimes you have to see the bird in focus. Sometimes it can be in the background, you know, just like how there's different caveats of the Bechdel test.
Yeah. For some people, a bird in the distance is enough. For others, they're a little... They're
Our standards are a little higher.
It's 2020.
Here.
We're going to need the bird to be in focus.
Well, you've heard her voice already, but let's properly introduce our guest. No, don't apologize at all. We love your contributions.
Thank you.
Of course, she is a writer, a filmmaker, and co-host of Night Call podcast. It's Emily Yoshida. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Welcome to the Birdcast.
Hey, yeah. No, I was trying to save this for after I got introduced because I did see a pigeon that really, really struck me just a few days ago when I had to get in my car and drive somewhere and I was on the 101 and I saw a pigeon just straight chilling in a lane on the freeway and it was empty enough that, you know, he could do that. And I wasn't 60 miles an hour or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's a pigeon. That pigeon's going to fly away. And it kind of did it until the very last minute. And I was like, am I going to just run over a pigeon on the 101? No. That feels very weird. It was one of many end timesy things, I feel like, that has happened to me.
The animals are for sure reclaiming the land.
Yeah. And the freeways.
The way the cats have been acting in my neighborhood, it's like, it's borderline inspiring. I'm just like, oh, I don't live here. You're right. Yeah. You're right. You were here first. Maybe. I don't know.
Your streets.
Mm-hmm. It's just like the end of that one Jurassic World movie that wasn't good. Which one? Both? Anyway.
Swish.
Emily, what's your relationship with the film Birds of Prey, the character of Harley Quinn, anything? Are you familiar with any comic books or any other like series that she's in, anything like that?
Not comics. The most exposure I probably ever had to Harley Quinn was in the cartoon, which is like, isn't that where she was originated, the Batman animated series?
I believe so.
Yeah.
So I didn't watch that, you know, passionately whenever that was. I mean, it was on when I was a kid and I remember seeing it a little bit. I was kind of more into X-Men as far as like cartoon versions of comic books. I never read any comic books growing up, but I did watch the TV versions. Mm-hmm. But I was always kind of intrigued by her. I think like in general, like her and Poison Ivy, even though I know like very little of either character, but just because, you know, I saw like Batman and Robin where Uma Thurman plays her when I was like in junior high. But I just thought it was kind of funny that there were two female Batman villains who were like cool, but also like came from a science background.
Mm-hmm. Like, progressive.
They're both like lab coat ladies who turn bad. And I thought that was very fun. Like I like that kind of trope in general. Like my version of that I really embraced was like, and so instead of comic books and all that, I was really into Sailor Moon and like anime and stuff mm-hmm. when I was a kid. And Sailor Moon in particular has one season where the villains are like an evil lab of witches and they all just like wear lab coats and get into trouble. And that was like A+ in my book. I love a bad lady in a lab coat. So yeah.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I'm not like super up on this universe or anything. But when I heard that they were doing a Harley Quinn movie, I was like, okay, that will be for me. Like more so than Wonder Woman or like Black Widow or any of these things we're supposed to be anticipating as women. The Harley Quinn movie, I was like, that'll be fun. Like I it doesn't need to be that great to me, but I feel like more on board with something about her than a lot of these other these other films. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
That's sort of where I came into this.
Yeah. Jamie, what about you? What's your relationship?
I think it's kind of similar to Emily's. I mean, if you listen to the Bechdel cast, you know I'm not a huge superhero movies person. They're just, I like it. Every time I'm like sat down in front of them, usually I'm like, this is fun, but I don't really seek them out. But I was excited to see, I don't know. I just thought that like it looks like a fun movie. I really liked the cast. I really like, I'm going to say his name wrong. I get so paranoid. Ewan.
It's Ewan.
Ewan. I said it wrong for the entire Moulin Rouge episode, and I still get.
Oh, that's so funny.
added for it. It was 2 years ago. Okay. I'm a big fan of his. I really like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I like the whole cast is just, it's a really fun cast. Rosie Perez, like it was just, I was just excited to see it. I hadn't seen and have not seen Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad. I did not subject myself to that. It's just like, now is not the time for me to see Suicide Squad. It's just not going to be. I'm assuming that this movie is quite different. But I saw it in the theaters and it's a fun movie. It's a fun movie. Rewatching it was interesting because I was watching it completely uncritically the first time and was just like, I'm just letting fun things happen. But I liked it. What about you, Caitlin?
I saw it in the theater as well. I really, really enjoyed it. This will be like a movie that I think I'll like continue to revisit. And I did watch Suicide Squad to like prepare for this episode because I was like, I do want to be able to like kind of compare and contrast and like have that context.
Brave of you.
So I did make this great sacrifice for
you're
the
a hero.
Show. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
And I have like a bit to say when we get to the discussion about how either movie treats Harley Quinn because it is, believe it or not, pretty vastly different. So I'm excited to talk about that. But yeah, I mean, I freaking love this movie. I give it a 10 out of 10 on the Caitlin Rompo meter. But I too don't have like, I haven't really read any comic books. I did not watch the Batman animated series. So I didn't get like that introduction to the Harley Quinn character then.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of interesting where I think that my main familiarity with Harley Quinn, I knew who she was and I knew what her basic backstory was, just I think through like cultural osmosis. But I think where I saw her most were on like guys wearing naughty peer t-shirts of like Harley Quinn like posed all sexy on a t-shirt. Like I saw her a lot in middle school on horny boys' shirts.
Yeah.
So I think she's had a real come up, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, she always, like, she just as easily can just turn into a really bad trope of, like, crazy-ass girlfriend. Like, that crazy bitch that you've met before. Mm-hmm. Like, that, and which is just, like, and I feel like that's what I imagine the Suicide Squad film uses her as. And just sort of ogles her, but is like, but she's crazy, so. I feel like people said similar things about the Justice League movie and Wonder Woman, where it's just, like, she is treated in a very markedly different way. And it's not a way you can immediately verbalize. It's kind of just all cinematic, less than what's necessarily on the page. Just like how the camera looks at her, you know, how we're meant to empathize with her or not. That feels very active in this movie, as I think it did in Wonder Woman too. I just think this is a more fun character. Yeah. So, yeah.
For sure. Well, should we get into the recap and go from there?
Let's do it.
So we open on some backstory for Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, of course. She had a rough childhood, but made her way through college. She got a PhD. She became a psychiatrist. And that is how she met Joker, who she fell in love with, kind of lost her sense of herself. And then eventually she and Joker break up, which is sort of the catalyst that gets this movie going.
And the way that they are able to avoid showing you Jared Leto in this movie is an art all its own. Like there are I didn't see Suicide Squad, but I just knew I didn't want to look at Jared Leto Joker, and that's not how I wanted to use my time watching this. And they don't make you look at Jared Leto Joker.
It's really
it made
nice.
Me happy.
Yeah. That's very nice of them. And it's also just fun. Even if it was a way to get around showing Jared Leto Joker, I love the animation at the beginning of it because it feels like it really sets the tone. Like it's very much like you are about to watch a cartoon. Like even if the whole thing won't be technically animated, it's going to feel like this.
For sure. So after this breakup, Harley Quinn resets her life. She gets her own place. She gets a pet hyena.
She's supposed to name him after Batman, right?
Yeah. She names him Bruce Wayne.
It was Bruce.
I felt like a genius when I was like, Bruce, I see.
We also see her skating around because she plays like roller derby now. And it's like, who are you? I, Tanya? Anyway.
She had to use those skills.
Yeah.
That's
and they come back later in the film.
Plant and payoff, baby. Love to see it.
Oh, wait. I want to bring up one more thing about the intro, which I just noticed on this watch through before, when she's talking about kind of striking out in love before mm-hmm. she met the Joker. It's like a slots type machine where it's like spinning through people, and like it lands on like two guys, then it lands on a lady, queer representation in Harley Quinn, and they didn't even make an article about it where they're like, this is the first fully bisexual DC character or whatever they would say.
She also says that she voted for Bernie Sanders, which is a real treat. It was a real treat.
Yeah.
Well, from my understanding, the Harley Quinn character is canonically bisexual. I mean, slide straight into my mentions if I'm wrong about this, because again, I have not read
that was
the source
what I was
material
seeing as well. And I was also seeing that Renee is canonically bisexual, even though that is not referenced really that much in this movie.
Well, it's mentioned that she and Ali Wong's character are like ex-girlfriends, so we get a little bit.
There's, canonically, I guess that she, and we'll get into this later, but like, I guess that she was like kicked out of the police force for reasons having to do with her sexuality.
Yeah.
Because she, but I don't know. I kind of appreciate that they reference it and then also keep it a cartoon.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So then we meet Roman Sionis. That's played by, and sorry, Jamie, how do you say his name again?
It's Ewan.
Yes, it is. Good job. Ewan McGregor. He's all like, hey, Harley Quinn, give Joker my best, because she has not told people about her breakup. So to get closure and to prove to the world that they're broken up and she's over him and all that stuff, she blows up a toxic industrial processing plant where their relationship bloomed. Then we cut to Renee Montoya, that's Rosie Perez's character. Mm-hmm. She is a detective who is examining a crime scene where four men were murdered. And then we get a flashback that shows a mysterious crossbow killer character, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, murdering these men. So Renee Montoya is examining this crime scene nearby when the plant gets blown up. And she's like, whoa, that must have been Harley Quinn, like the J necklace she left behind. This was her and Joker's spot. So she goes and tries to find and arrest Harley Quinn the following morning. And she is one of many people who are unhappy with Harley Quinn. So there's a lot of people chasing her. And then she gets captured by Roman Sionis's people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Renee Montoya is working on a case against this Roman guy, and she's heard that this diamond shipment is coming in, and she thinks it's the Bertinelli diamond, which belonged to the Bertinelli crime family. And Roman Sionis is trying to get his hands on it because
it reminded me of National Treasure. They're like, there's a map inside the diamond.
There's a code in the
and
diamond.
We have to, I think we just watched National Treasure 2 recently, but I'm like, there's always a map inside of something important. There's a map inside of everything.
There's a MacGuffin inside a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
So Roman is trying to get his hands on this diamond because it's going to give him access to all these funds and connections that will allow him to control all of Gotham. Mm. So then Renee gets a call from her informant, Dinah Lance, a.k.a. Black Canary, played by Journey Smollett-Bell, saying that this diamond is in the possession of this pickpocket kid, Cassandra Cain. Mm. Then we flash back to a week earlier, when Harley and Black Canary meet, or I don't know if this is them meeting for the first time, but we see an interaction they have. Black Canary ends up saving Harley Quinn from some bad guys. Mm. Roman Sionis sees how good Black Canary is at fighting and promotes her to being his driver. She had previously had like a singing gig in his club.
Which I feel like it isn't. I wish that she got to talk more about how much that job change sucks for her.
Yeah, that's a terrible job change. Right? Like, unless it pays considerably better.
Like, she says that at first she's like, oh, I'd rather continue being a singer. And then he's like, well, you're a valet now. And she's like, okay. It's like,
you can carve your own career path at the underworld club. I mean, I'm sure.
There's other clubs. I'm assuming the pay bump was sweet enough that it made it worth
Maybe it was just sort of like a paid for exposure type thing with the singing.
Yeah.
That could be it.
She's just told there's industry in the club all the time. Yeah.
There's always talent scouts in the back of the room.
It's probably the idea that, like, if she's his driver, she gets closer into his, like, inner circle and, like, is more protected or has more connections. I don't know. That's what I imagine. Like, at least he thinks he's offering her, but she's like, I actually don't want to really be closer to you because you're scary. Anyway.
You skipped the part where he peels some people's faces
off. Yeah, I did skip that part. That does happen. he peels some people's faces off because they didn't want to, like, go into business with him. And he's like, oh, really? Then your face is gone.
It's another there's a few scenes in this movie where it's like perfect live action cartoon, and the face peeling scene is one of them. Like, they could have so easily gone like dark, broody, other Batman worlds that exist on it, and it's so fun.
See, I think the face peeling thing is there are two scenes in this movie that like are suddenly a little too real, and one of them I think works. And I'm sure you guys know what one I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is this one where I think it's so early in the film where I'm just like, one, who are these people? Two, like, we're going straight in for a face. Like, I have no context for this scene. So it's just like really grisly. And you see like the limp piece of face toted off. And but it's not even done in a really over the top way, because it's really like, face peeling at the end of the day isn't like, you know, Harley Quinn doing her jump down on the guy's leg and breaking it. Like, that's like Looney Tunes cartoon violence. That's like great. The face peeling is just like, ew.
No. I don't know why I like it. I like at the end he goes, woo. At the end of the, you're like, oh, I guess it's okay.
Oh, Ewan.
There's a few separate moments in the movie where he just goes, woo. And you're just like, oh, yeah. I guess that's his catchphrase. In the movie, he says woo a lot. He goes, Harley Quinn, woo! I'm like, that's how I feel right now.
Yeah, same. So after Black Canary gets promoted to being Roman Sionis' driver, a few days later, he sends her on an errand to pick up the Bertinelli diamond. The trouble is, though, that it gets stolen by that pickpocket, Cassandra Cain. She is played by Ella J. Basco. Then Cassandra gets picked up by the cops right away, so she swallows the diamond so she won't have to turn it over. So we're now back to the present. Harley has been captured and brought to Roman Sionis so that he can kill her, because there's all these grievances. One of them is that she voted for Bernie, and he also just hates women. One of my favorite ones was that she spoils a lot of movies. So he has all these grievances against her.
He's generally villainous.
Indeed.
He's villainous in a very general sense, in a way that I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about that.
It's supposed to be like his thing is that he's a narcissist.
Yeah.
But like that doesn't really come across. Like he does feel rather vague to me. Like the only, and I was tweeting about this when I watched it, like the only reference point for me for like what this kind of character is supposed to be is like, did you guys ever watch The Hills?
Yes.
He's a real like Brent Bolthouse type character, I feel like, but dialed up to 11. Mm-hmm. Just a slimy kind of club impresario. Mm-hmm. And proper, like he's a landlord. He's like a property owner, developer. So that also added to that. I was like, okay, I get this sort of villain, but it's sort of hard to read at first.
Maybe that's why he has to yell woo so much to punctuate his violent acts.
Also, he's a supervillain named Black Mask, which is also a very nondescript supervillain name.
So vague, yeah.
Right, it's very.
And you never see it except like there's a little cutaway to him putting on said black mask, then we don't see it again until the very end of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, and is that like a canonical character in the DC universe? Like, because that really feels like they were scraping the bottom of the barrel as far as concepts.
He is canon.
Okay. I guess he's just, I mean, there's so many like Batman villains that I've never heard of. Like, I know the ones that have been in Batman movies, but those are the only ones I know of. So
right,
that makes sense. Okay, so anyway, Roman is like, I'm going to kill you, Harley, but she makes a bargain with him and says that she will find this diamond and like uses it as like a bargaining chip, like, don't kill me and I'll find this diamond for you. And he's like, okay, you have until midnight to find it. And then Harley Quinn goes to the police precinct where Cassandra Cain is being held, breaks her out, and then when Harley discovers that Cassandra swallowed the diamond, they go to a store, they buy a bunch of laxatives, and they go back to Harley Quinn's apartment to wait it out. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, remember the crossbow killer? She shows up again. Her name is actually Huntress, also Helena Bertinelli, because she's the daughter of the Bertinelli crime family who were all murdered, and she does not like that Roman is after her family's diamond. Or that's what I thought when I was watching this, and then it turns out she's just trying to find...
She's trying to kill his, like, assist... She's got, like, a Kill Bill narrative going, where she mm-hmm. has, like, a list of however many people involved in a traumatic event that she needs to kill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's his... It's Chris Messina that she wants to kill. She yeah. actually... I don't think she actually cares about Roman, because he was one of the goons who came and killed her family.
Right. Victor Zsasz.
Yeah.
Which it didn't fully occur... I think... I mean, the movie does tell you that, but it didn't occur to me until the end, where I'm like, oh, I guess she didn't care about Black Mask.
Not really.
Because yeah. she shows up, she kills Chris Messina, and then is like, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And then yeah. Rosie Perez is like, who do you think funded this whole operation? It was because Roman is just trying to do the thing. Like, she ties it all back.
They're like, plot. There are a few times in the third act where they have to, like, stand in a room and be like, so, this is what's going on, and this is our relationship to the plot right now. Also, mm-hmm. we're all friends now. Okay,
yeah.
Let's start the scene.
This is why I should care about what's going on, and this is why you should care about what's going on. Like, it's just, you know, reiterating the stakes for everybody.
Right. This is where I feel Rosie Perez really shines, because she can make some very expository dialogue sound like not that, like very urgent and cool.
Yeah.
I love Rosie Perez.
Yeah, she's great. So Huntress shows up. She's looking for the bad guys, basically. Mm-hmm. And then Harley Quinn's friend, Doc, sells out her whereabouts. And she's very disheartened. And she's like, oh, well, if this is the way the world is, I guess I got to tell Roman to come and collect Cassandra. She makes this arrangement to meet at Amusement Mile. And everyone goes there. It's like this rundown theme park. Renee Montoya, Black Canary, and Huntress all show up because they've all got business with either Harley Quinn, Roman, or one of his associates. Mm. But they all decide to band together and take down Roman and his goons. And there's the big fight, and it seems like they've won, but then Cassandra gets kidnapped, so Harley Quinn goes after her. There's a big chase. Then Cassandra plants a grenade on Roman, and then Harley Quinn flings him over the railing and he blows into bits, and it's a great moment of catharsis. and then Huntress gets the diamond back and gets her family fortune back. Then Renee, Black Canary, and Huntress all decide to band together as the Birds of Prey to fight crime throughout Gotham. Mm-hmm. And then Harley Quinn goes off with Cassandra. She's made Cassandra her, like, apprentice, and then she drives off into the sunset or whatever time of day it is. The end.
The end.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back to discuss.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
So where do we want to start with this movie? I've got some pros. I've got some cons. Where do we want
to
start?
Well, maybe would it make most sense to start by kind of how the Harley Quinn character was depicted previously in Suicide Squad and note those differences?
Yeah, and then I've got some notes on comic book canon for the other Birds of Prey. So do you want to kick it off with?
Yeah. So the Harley Quinn character evolved and is treated differently as a character between Suicide Squad, which came out in 2016, was written and directed by men, versus Birds of Prey, which was written and directed by women. Imagine that. So in Suicide Squad, I would say that the Harley Quinn character is largely characterized by her relationship with a man, the Joker, who she is obsessed with. She wears a jacket that says property of the Joker, you know, things like that. She is surrounded by mostly men. The story is populated by mostly male characters. We don't really know that much about her. And what we do learn, a lot of what we learn, is what other characters say about her. And that's mostly that she is, quote, crazy. And her character is hypersexualized in terms of cinematography, wardrobe choices, fight choreography. Like, we see the, you know, she wraps her legs around a man's face and pussy slams him into the ground move happens
the
in Suicide
classic
Squad.
Classic female in an action movie. Three kicks and a pussy slam and then get her off screen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So all of that versus some just sort of basic things, and then we'll go into far more detail about everything. But in Birds of Prey, as the title of the movie suggests, which is The Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, the story is about her being free of a toxic relationship with Joker, and her kind of, like, you know, emotional goal of the movie is wanting a fresh start. She wants to be her own woman. She is no longer defined by her relationship to a man. Mm-hmm. She is surrounded by mostly women, and she is no longer the object of the male gaze. I would say, like, the closest thing we get to any type of gaze is Harley Quinn getting borderline horny as she watches her bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich being made, which is also one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie. And then similarly, her fight choreography is not sexualized. Like, now she's punching people, bashing them with baseball bats, throwing them on the ground, things like that.
I liked her use of a mallet.
Yeah.
I like a good mallet-related injury.
When a mallet swinging. Ooh. I mean, it's just fun. It's a great principal weapon to have, I think.
It
a
is.
Mallet.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Says a lot about you.
Especially if you're Margot Robbie and you, like, have the biggest smile in the entire world that you can just, like, spread across your face as you swing a mallet around. It's just fun. Like, it looks great.
Yeah.
So those are the main kind of just initial differences. Yeah. So, I mean, that just goes to show, like, when a story is being handled by men who really only care about a woman being present in the story to, like, be hot, and that's basically it, the character is treated very differently versus when you have the story in the hands of, like, women with an agenda, like the director, the writer. I watched a few interviews with each of them saying, and, like, I mean, producer Margot Robbie, they were all like, we want this to be, like, a feminist, like, smashing of the patriarchy. So just goes to show who's behind the camera can largely influence, you know, the movie that gets made.
Yeah. I think the things that really, aside from just the general framing of the character, which, again, haven't seen Suicide Squad, so don't have an exact, I have an idea just from having seen trailers, evidence, stuff, and clips. But I think, like, aside from just how it views her, I think also the way that it can build a sense of danger out of these various scenarios she finds herself in, particularly with men, like, there's a lot of subtlety and, like, and stuff that I felt like I genuinely hadn't seen before in this kind of film. Like there's a part where she gets hit with like a tranquilizer dart or just like a paralyzing dart or something. Mm-hmm. So she's like conscious, but she can't move her body. And then, you know, the second that somebody starts to kind of creep on her in that scenario, it's like, like your hackles go up mm-hmm. as a viewer and you're just like, oh, this is the worst. This would suck. And, you know, it's still kind of done in this sort of wackadoo sort of tone, but it's able to kind of flip the perspective a little bit with, you know, stuff like tranquilizer darts and stuff where it's just, you kind of have a new sort of palette to play with when you're looking at it from that perspective, as opposed to what we usually see in these films.
Yeah. I did a little bit of research on just like what is the basic canon of a lot of the women we see in this movie, just to, because I had a sneaking suspicion that maybe some of it had changed. And I like the choices that they make to alter some of the backstory too, because I think that, you know, because the comic book world for so long was so male dominated that all of their canonical stories are somehow tied to a man. And so, like, I mean, Harley Quinn, we've already talked through. Dinah Lance was originally a detective's daughter who wants to be, like, she's someone's daughter, and that's why she's involved in the story. Huntress's story is pretty much the same, where she's an heiress who witnesses the murder of her family. Cassandra Cain has a very different backstory, where she's kind of, I mean, in this she is like, they make vague references to like she is like in the foster care system and she is not being serviced by it very well, which I kind of wish we had like a little more to go off of than like two vague yelling adults in the background. And that stands to get very depressing, but it was like interesting because that is not canonically who she is at all. She's originally discovered at a martial arts tournament. She becomes someone's bodyguard and then she becomes an assassin. Mm-hmm. So she was very different and she had two living parents. She was like the daughter of like these famous married assassins in the books. So I don't know why.
She also, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. She's like also Batgirl at one point.
Yeah, she becomes Batgirl.
Because she's like actually a Wayne. Like she was put into the foster system, but is like related to Bruce Wayne.
There's a few different versions of her too, which makes it more confusing. But that was like one of the characters that they strayed really far from, I think more for plot reasons than for mm-hmm. other reasons. But I mean, most of the changes were fun and like, I feel like gives the character more room to do stuff.
I will say that she's probably my favorite of all of what I think are the birds of prey in this movie, just because I think she's developed with the most clarity mm-hmm. of all the characters. And also, I just like feel I feel very represented and very seen when I see like a awkward kind of grumpy teenage Asian girl who like with a permanent like frown. That's just like I'm just like, oh, they made a superhero movie where like teenage me got to be like Harley Quinn's apprentice. That's cool.
Hell yeah. And like her eternal pink cast too. I love so yeah. much. Like. Yeah, I like and what's her name? Ella.
Oh, Ella J. Basco.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's like, I can't yeah. wait to see her in more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's super, super funny. Yeah. Really, really fun. Yeah.
But yeah, those are the canon changes that are made to the main characters.
Yeah, it's the relationships that they end up having with each other on screen in this movie, like I really enjoyed like how all those unfolded. They pretty much all have like an arc where mm-hmm. they all start out kind of antagonistic, because at first like Harley and Renee have like the like criminal versus cop dynamic, so they're like kind of mm-hmm. natural enemies. Mm-hmm. We've got Black Canary being super annoyed by Harley all the time. You've got like Harley kind of joining forces with Cassandra and like saving her at first, but then like being willing to sell her out to save her own skin, but then like feeling really bad and guilty about that and apologizing and eventually like getting forgiveness. And then like when they converge at the end and they're like, well, all these people are probably going to kill us and we have a better chance if we band together and like fight as a group. And everyone's just like, well, I guess. Okay, fine. And then,
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that stuff is great. I think probably if I had to boil down my one gripe with this film, which is like not to take away from any of these individual performances, but I do think that it feels like a little bit of a disservice to trying to do a standalone Harley Quinn movie to try like instantly try to make it a girl gang movie, just because I don't think they have enough time. And I think that some characters I think get really kind of thrown by the wayside. Like, I think that you could lift out the entire Huntress story from this film and not really lose anything.
She doesn't know anybody in the story until the end, and she's pursuing a different villain than everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, kind of similarly, you could, it would be less clean, but you could also take out the Black Canary part entirely and then just have more, like, I think you have a really great movie between Cassandra, Harley, and Renee. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the cop who's looking for the trying to reform herself villain and the girl she has to take under her wing. Like, that's like a fun little movie. Mm-hmm. And you have much more time with all those characters. You would get more time for Renee and like really build out, you know, her stuff that's just gestured out about her conditions at her workplace and like her history, and that she's sort of like, you know, it's very rare we get to see a kind of grizzled, not so virtuous cop that's a woman. Mm-hmm. And I wish we kind of had more time with that, because I just love Rosie Perez, so I just like wanted more of that as a kind of foil to Harley, because they kind of have a lot of crossover. Like, there's a lot that they have in common,
for sure.
Yeah, that's like my biggest like blanket, like what I would change about this film, because I was so happy to get a chance to spend time with this character, and then it's like, oh, but we have to like build a squad, then it just feels really busy in the second half.
Yeah,
sure. I see that. I don't mind that they're there though, like the Huntress and the Black Canary character. While it does, it might like take away real estate that could be used to like further develop some of the other characters. I'm just like, but they're so fun to look at when they're fighting and stuff.
I think I don't mean this as, I mean, this is just something that I've been thinking about over the last couple of days of just like prepping for this episode. I feel like, because now there have been, I think this is the third, whatever, in the past 5 years, female driven superhero movie. And there's always like a bunch of to do about like, will women succeed at the box office? Will they finally prove that they deserve to be blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And this was one of those movies. This is the only of those three movies that did not so exceed expectations that, I mean, it's frustrating because this movie didn't do badly. It just didn't make $1 billion. And so I think a lot of people regarded it as a failure and most likely a setback for further female-driven superhero movies, which is equally frustrating. Yeah. But I do, I just watching the setup of this movie, I feel like there is a possibility that whatever, 10, 20 years from now, you can sort of look at the way this movie is, and it's kind of our, this year's or this era's like girl power formula is very much at play in this movie. And I like it for the most part, but I do feel like there's like, I wish that there was a little more freedom to do. I mean, like, this movie came out a few months after Joker came out, a movie that I did not like, but a movie where clearly the people, the creatively, were given free rein to do whatever the fuck they wanted. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, I feel like you see a few things that when women are appearing on screen together right now, you kind of see a lot where they all band together at the end, even though they don't all know each other. And like, they all band together kind of just because that's what women are supposed to do.
Because they're all women and they realize they have this in common.
Right. Sure. And so those, like, it's, I really like this movie. And I also was trying to like keep reminding myself, it's a fucking cartoon, Jamie. Like, everyone bands together at the end of the cartoon.
Right.
But because there were all these like expectations put on top of it, And maybe having like less main characters would be able to contextualize this, but I do kind of get like a little like annoyed when it's like, oh, well, of course they're all going to fight together. They're all women and all women are friends with all women. And that's how women work. Enjoy the fight. And I do enjoy the fight. But there are moments like that that sometimes kind of bug me.
Yeah, I think the strongest stuff in it has nothing to do with like, I'm going to do this even though I'm a woman. And it's all like about somebody trying to reform themselves from being a shithead, which is a universal experience that many people can relate to, whether they are, no matter what gender they are. And so I think that's where, like, I think you have a really clean, especially for a cartoon, which I feel like should be broad and should be like easily painted and in very bold strokes. Like, I think that you have a very clean movie if it's just about that, if you have it be between Harley and Renee.
Right.
And yeah, I think then, but when it becomes a thing of like getting over a breakup and finding yourself through girlfriends, then that's like another thing on top of that, which is like, I don't, in this one, I just don't feel like it's set up as much as the other half, which is just like, maybe this guy was a bad influence on me and I can be like a better person without him. I don't know. Yes, it's all a cartoon. I feel right. like yeah. it's just like, you can't take it too, and that's the fun of the fight scenes too, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just that it doesn't feel like it's taking itself that seriously while at the same time doing really, really good fight scenes. Mm-hmm. So that's like a virtue all on its own. But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, yes, the motivation for all of them to band together at the end is perhaps flimsy at best for each character. Like, you literally have like Huntress being like, sure, you know, like, I guess I'm not doing anything else tonight.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of wink at it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I guess that narratively there could be stronger motivation for all of these characters to have a reason to band together. And if we maybe knew a little bit more about them, we would understand them wanting to come together to fight together better. But at the same time, like, I don't know, I'm just like, oh, this is like I think this is the first ever all-female superhero ensemble movie, because like the other superhero ensembles have been, you know, your Avengers, your Guardians of the Galaxies, your Justice Leagues, like your X-Men's, the things that
and their reasons for banding together are always fairly flimsy as well. Yeah.
Often, yeah. Sure. And, you know, those are movies where men largely outnumber women. So for this to be like a all-female ensemble superhero movie, I don't know, I was like very excited by that. And sure, it's a little flimsy why they all band together and stuff, but I'm just like, oh, but I don't know. I don't know. I think maybe I will cut this movie a little too much slack because I just enjoy watching it. But
no, it's fun. Yeah. I mean, like, this is the thing I was talking about at the top of the show. Like, I love, like, the genre is called Magical Girl, like the anime about like girl gangs of superheroes or whatever who all do transformation sequences and have powers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Which is always like, that's my comic book shit, like, that I kind of uncritically am just into and know way too much about. Yeah, and that's like, never, it's not that it's that much more like well defined why these people end up working together in that genre. It's just like, well, I guess we all have powers and we have to do stuff together. Mm-hmm. I guess at the end of the day it would work if I felt like I knew all those characters better. Mm-hmm. Like, then it's fine. Like, you can introduce your central character and then build a squad around them. And I feel like that stuff was done with less care than the Harley stuff.
And like, so, you were saying, Emily, it's like they all are like shitheads, which is part of what I like about them. Like, we've all seen a scene where they're being assholes. And so for them to just like drop that, it felt like two different things were happening at once. Like, that scene has less to do with their characterization than the fact that this scene hasn't existed before on this scale, which is fine. I mean, both can exist, but it feels like a very roundabout limitation where it's just,
right.
I don't know, if that room were full of guys, I don't think that there would be that pressure to do that, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. Or feel like you have to stock it that heavily. Like Joker is a pretty sparse film character wise. Like, there's not that many people on it. It's like there's confidence that Joker on his own is enough for a movie. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing where it just felt a little bit like gilding a lily here. It's like, no, you got a great lead. You got a great actress playing her. You got a really fun, kinetic director working on it. Like, just be confident in these elements. Like, you got it. It's ready to be a fun film. It just had a little too much in the salad, I think.
And if the superhero genre were a little more willing to have female standalone movies, this movie could be three good movies.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, that's like the other like in meta or like inside baseball thing where it's just like you get the feeling that they're doing this because like they're not sure that they're going to get the second Harley Quinn movie where you could actually just have that be the Birds of Prey movie. Like tease it at the end of Harley Quinn and then be like, oh, and she's going to have this whole squad. You can't wait to meet them. It's going to be so much fun now that we've met this person. And mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Which would be great. I mean, I hope they get another one, but, you know, we'll see how well this does, like how many people turn to this in quarantine times. I feel like a lot of people will, but.
I hope so. It put me in a great mood. It made me very happy.
No, same. I was so stoked to watch it. I like ate pasta and watched Harley Quinn and just,
I've been eating so many like egg and cheese on toast, like sandwiches since rewatching this movie. So
does she have bacon on that?
Yeah, she does. I don't have any bacon.
I like that we see them. I mean, this is like another granular thing that we talk about all the time, but like women eat in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's seen. It's known. It's even a plot point that women eat.
She just wants that sandwich.
Which is like so satisfying. I love it.
And they're eating like tacos and burritos at the end, like oh, it's great.
Do they look like they still have to go to the gym 500 hours a week? Yes, it's a movie. Mm-hmm.
But I always appreciate that in a movie, like an action movie, where people are doing a lot of like essentially cardio. Mm-hmm. It's like, I gotta refuel.
True, they need protein.
Yeah.
We gotta take another quick break, but we'll come right back.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back. And speaking of cardio and going to the gym and stuff like that.
I could feel this coming.
I want to talk about the fight scenes.
Ooh, yeah.
So a lot of discussion has been had about one particular small moment in one of the scenes when Harley Quinn gives a hair tie to Black Canary. It's just like I see that you're struggling because your long hair is flying all around while you're kicking ass. Would you like a hair tie? And Black Canary's like, yep, thank you. And like, this was such a real moment for so many people because never before has this really happened in a movie where women are participating in the action scenes. In most cases, like, their hair is just like flying around.
It's like when Wonder Woman's walking through World War One and she's just like
her hair flying around. Yes. Perfectly. Yeah. Not just flying into her mouth like it was.
Yeah. So I too appreciate that. A lot of people, there's already, again, a lot of discussion about this tiny moment, but I was like, oh my gosh. And I watched an interview with the screenwriter and she explained like the origins of that where
it's her sister, right?
She and her sister would, just like watch movies together and see that like women would never pull up their hair for any reason. And she's like, yeah, anytime I like eat a meal, I pull up my hair so that my hair doesn't get in my food. Or if I have to move around, I pull up my hair, and it's like, that's what usually happens. So just appreciated that.
No, it's great.
And the action scenes, I mean, the action scenes in this movie are, they're long. They're not like the few quick, like, I think that there's like three extended action sequences. Like, one is Harley by herself, and then there's the big climactic fight at the end. But we get to see her fight a lot, and she fights well, and she fight. It's like, I feel like a good balance of action movie fighting and like cartoony fighting.
Well, it's like very martial arts movie, and it's like people get hurt too, which is why you want to watch it. Like, like, it's not like these Marvel movies where you're just like, nobody's fucking gonna get hurt, these people can't even get bruised, like bones are broken and stuff in this, and you kind of, and you know that, and you, it feels, I'm sure that a lot of it is augmented by effects and stuff like that, but it doesn't feel overly done over, so you do feel like you're watching people doing stunts and coming in contact with each other's bodies, so you just want to watch it for that, which is like, I always like check my phone if I'm watching a Marvel movie at home and it goes to the action sequence, because it's like, what is there to watch? Like, there's nothing
long
to watch here. I know a lot of money and time goes to that, and I you know, support all the people who work in VFX, but yeah, those sequences are so disposable in almost every single one of those movies.
True.
And this did not feel like that. It was great.
I mean even starting with Harley Quinn breaking that guy's leg at the beginning, you're just like, oh, it's exciting.
Yeah. Great move.
And I feel like that like sets the tone for the way that violence is in the movie, in a way that, like, I don't know, I love that leg break.
Because
so
then
much.
It's like, not only does she break his leg, but then he's like, "You broke my fucking leg!" Like, it's just like
they like hang on it. Yeah,
yeah. It's not like he then hobbles off or dies instantly. It's just like, what? It's just it's a good reaction.
And she breaks his leg because he calls her a dumb slut, and she's like, "Oh, really? Is that what you think?" And then she breaks his leg, and then she's like, "I have a PhD, bitch." Like,
yeah.
I love how often she reminds everybody that she has a PhD. It's so great.
Which is a good time for me to mention something that I don't like to bring up, but I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University. Yeah.
You should break someone's leg over it.
I will.
Yeah.
No, I won't.
Next time anybody questions your credentials, it's leg breaking time.
Yeah, I found that very satisfying. Like, that, just all of the fighting. I mean, it just was like really good movie fighting.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence room fight, I have two favorite. I love the evidence. Actually, I like them all. Whatever. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I do. The evidence room fight is great, if only for the part where they shoot up the giant bag of cocaine and then she suddenly gets cocaine superpowers. This is also something that would never happen in a Marvel movie. And it's like, it's like, sure, it's like edgelordy type shit or whatever, but it's also just like funny. It's just, it feels like something from like an 80s action movie, which tend to be a lot more coke fueled anyway, both on screen and off. So.
Very true.
Do we know why Black Canary is a really good fighter? That was like, this is again me questioning a cartoon, but I think I could identify why every woman in the Birds of Prey averse was a good fighter, except for Black Canary, who I truly don't understand why. I guess she just is.
She like grew up in a rough neighborhood. That's like kind of
right. I'm like, that's like, get. I guess that's like cartoon. I don't know.
I don't know.
She was the one character that I wish you just got more with Black Canary in general. Cause I mean, Emily, you were referencing this earlier that like, I'm glad she's there and you feel like there's a lot of good character stuff in there, but you don't really get to find out that much about her. I don't know why she's a good fighter. I don't know why she, like, I don't exactly know why she is just accepting this new job,
right,
lying down, other than that she's scared of him,
or why she's working for him in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, when Rosie Perez like comes to her with like, "Hey, I had an arrangement with the other driver," and she's like, "You know, you're working for this really awful guy," she like defends Roman and says like, "Well, he took me off the streets and protects me and stuff like that." But I think like she is probably beholden to him much more than she would like to be. He like treats her like property. He treats her like his little pet. It's like really how he views her is very creepy.
I just wish I knew what it was. Like, I wish, and I think that also speaks to like my I don't know. I know it's a cartoon, you guys. I just like some of the vagueness of Black Mask's villainy. I feel like maybe that's a cast off problem of that too. Of like, he's just a mean guy.
Yeah,
he just is nice to nobody. I mean, and I think the one Black Mask moment that I felt like I didn't need. I didn't mind the face peeling, but what I don't think that was like totally necessary was that scene where he makes a woman take her clothes off at the club and like is really leering at her in this way that I didn't feel like was really necessary. I feel like it was like kind of hitting you over the head with the fact that it's like he's misogynist. It's like, yeah, we know. Like,
yeah,
we know. Why do we need to see this scene of him doing that? And it reminded me of an equally uncomfortable and useless scene in Bombshell that I didn't like.
Well, okay, so director Kathy Yan fought for this scene to stay in the movie because there are cuts of it where they did take that scene out, but she fought for it to be there because, and I have a quote here from her, she says, quote, "I think it's a huge turning point for Roman. It's a huge turning point for Canary. And the way that we shot it was hopefully not about the sexual violence upon the woman. It was more about Roman, what he's capable of, and Canary seeing him for who he really is for the first time. Now she can fully cut herself off from him, and I thought it was a really important scene, so we fought for it," end quote. And in that scene, you do see Canary realizing just how awful he is, and you can like see the gears working in her mind of like, oh my God, I have to get out of this situation. I need to distance myself from this scary, scary man.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean, Jamie.
It's her movie. Yeah.
I mean, I think that the scene is just technically well done as far as like making you feel uncomfortable, which I think you should. And I think she's right. Like, it's not about the sexualization of the woman. It's about like what it feels like to be in the presence of this like terrible dude. Yes, it's been very underlined at that point. I do think the scene makes more sense in a movie where you have more time to track Black Canary and her relationship to Roman and get that there's something that needs to be accomplished there where she is on the fence about like, well, he's a bad guy, but he pays me or whatever. Like, you know, that she's sort of making excuses for him. And this is the moment where she realizes she can't make excuses for him, which it sounds like that's what Kathy Yan was trying to do with it. I think that there's just not enough runway for that at this point. But I do think like, you could keep the scene exactly the same if you built up to it more, and I think it would be really effective.
The way it appears in the movie didn't feel earned to me, and I don't know, I mean we've talked about this in past episodes too. I'm just generally like, I think sensitive and like annoyed by like, do we really need a scene where another woman is like humiliated in order to better characterize a male villain? I just like, I don't think it's always, I don't know. That it's small gripe, but that didn't work for me in this one.
Sure. I wanted to go back to like the fighting scenes a little bit more. To sing some more praises, more or less, much like Canary sings. Anyway, okay.
For reasons we don't know.
Can break glass with her voice, but then passes out. That's like a...
Yeah, I feel like that needed to also be set up better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, anyway. she has to have the fighting skills, because then otherwise she would have one move per fight. Like, and I'm done.
Anyway, so, but things I did like was that we see women using real weapons and not kitchen appliances. We talk all the time about how if women are allowed to fight in movies, like they're usually using frying pans and stuff, but we see crossbows, we see guns, we see a mallet, a baseball bat, things like that. We've also talked in various episodes about like the tendency for movies to not allow men and women to fight each other. It's usually like the one woman in the good guy gang is made to fight the one woman in the bad guy gang.
And they almost like launch her out of the bad guy gang to be like, okay, we know you've only seen this character twice before, but here's why we have her
so that she can fight the one good lady. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And like, I don't know, maybe this is the idea of like, we don't want to show a man being violent toward a woman, or probably more likely it's the idea that we don't see women as being equal, like an equal fighting opponent to a, quote, stronger man, so she can fight the woman who is on her level. Like, I think that's what the filmmakers who have made, like, fight scenes like this, that's probably what they're thinking.
Yeah, which I am way more insulted by the thing where you can't show, or like, you don't want to see a man in a fight with a woman. Like, not so much about her ability to win the fight, but just the idea that, like, we're going to deny that there is ever violence done against women by men. Like, it just doesn't happen, so you can't see it. And I think that so much of this movie is about, like, no, these men are violent towards women all the time. That's why this world sucks that she lives in. Like, it's very frank in its cartoony way about that, which I appreciate.
Those moments are more, I mean, those moments where, like, Black Mask, like, is physically violent towards Harley were more effective for me than the humiliation of a random woman. Like, that is like, it's personal. It's like, you're like, oh, even if I enjoyed the woo, I'd fuck this guy.
What if he said woo in her face, though, while he was like,
I'd be like, oh, I don't know how to feel.
I mean, I like that this movie, there's a big departure from that idea in that you see women fighting men pretty much constantly.
And men not questioning themselves before, like, being violent towards a woman, which is, like, you know, just reflective.
I also enjoy that women are never saved by a man in this movie. If they are saved by someone, like that scene where Black Canary saves Harley Quinn from being assaulted by that guy after a long night of drinking, women are saving each other or just, like, fending off their own attackers by themselves.
And I like that they're, like, they're with Harley's character. And part of why, like, Harley is, I think, such a, like, a fun character to get her almost her own movie, I guess, is that, like, she is an asshole and, like, she betrays other people in the story and then has to, like, dial back and be like, oh, wait, no, like, I really, like, you would never get that with any Marvel character. Like, they're just too morally superior to ever make a mistake and ever, like, wrong someone. And I like that there are, like, conflicts between, it works for me best with Cassandra, Harley, and Renee, but, like, you know, there's conflicts between the women for, like, the better part of the story, and they make sense, and you get to see them kind of, like, have to resolve it. You don't get that a lot.
Oh, and going back to the thing about them never being saved by a man, I mean, they don't introduce a single good man in this movie. No,
like, suitable candidate.
There's nobody. Like, they're who would do it, which is sort of, I think that's one thing that feels, one of the things that you kind of aren't even thinking about at first until maybe, like, you start to get into the climactic fight scenes where you're just like, oh yeah, we've gotten this whole time and there's no male hero, which is kind of, like, just because you're watching this sort of a movie, it feels like a little bit of a vacuum, but then you're like, no, this is fine. It works great.
And not even really, like, guy that gets it, which I feel like is, like, looming character in the back of, and, like, the male feminist. Make one rescue. Like, there's no male feminist t-shirt guy character, which is great. There's more than enough female characters to fill that role.
Couple last things about things as they relate to fighting. I'd like that we do not see Cassandra Cain fight in the big, like, sequence at the end, because she's, like, a child. And I think a very lazy, tropey choice that we've seen before is, like, the precocious 12-year-old who's really smart and good at everything.
But she still gets, like, a kill in at the end, and, like, she's not totally excluded from the action, too, which is, like, I was happy about.
That is my least favorite trope, like, currently, I think, is the young fighting machine little girl, like, going back to the professional and shit. Like, I hate it. I find it really gross. I can't, like...
And it's, like, I feel like that, I don't know, that, like, fucks with your kid brain, too, when you see stuff like that when you're a kid. You're like, oh, I should fight adults? Like, yeah. It's like, no, please don't fight adults.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this way to, like, I don't know. I found, like, Logan to be the most egregious one recently, even though, like, I think that kid is cool, like the actress who plays her and everything is like cool and does mm-hmm. a good job, but it's just like, you can't have a woman in this story, so you're gonna have like a little girl who doesn't talk but like just does egregious violence on people. Right. It just feels so weird and stunted and strange.
Like, yeah,
that it keeps happening. It's so annoying.
Yeah,
is it the movie Kick-Ass where there's like a little girl too who's tearing people apart?
It's Chloe Grace Moretz. It was like her in entree into showbiz.
Speaking of things, I'm exhausted. Okay. But I totally agree with you about Cassandra, and I like that the story doesn't just sideline her entirely. She gets this like big win at the mm-hmm. end of the fight sequence, and
it's been nicely set up too, where like she uses her pickpocket skills to like plant the thing on him and then pulls out the pin of the grenade, and then the scene where he like blows into like a bazillion different bits as he's like falling into the water. I was like,
he turns into human confetti.
Wow, what a motif, confetti.
That chase is also so fun that leads up to that with her on the roller skates.
I know.
Very, very fun. Wanted to
another
do
great
it.
Callback. So good.
Whip me.
The outfits in this movie, I thought it would have been so easy to fuck up the costuming of this movie, but it's still like, it still feels like it's taking place in the Harley Quinn world, but it isn't like exploitative. It's like everyone's outfit is very well thought out. It's not, I don't know. It would have been so easy to fuck it up, and they didn't.
I mean, her like caution tape, like fringe coat that she wears towards the beginning.
It's so
Hot Topic. It's literally, this whole movie is Hot Topic merch based. Yeah. And I mean that as a compliment, but this whole movie is Hot Topic.
I know. This is one movie that like, I know will not get a costuming nomination, but should, because every outfit that she wears is just like, I want it.
So Black Canary's outfits too. Like everyone, it's so good.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to say about the last fighting related thing I want to say is at the end of the movie when they're like having their like morning margaritas, they're like all bunged up. You see them with like mm-hmm. scrapes and injuries. And I feel like women, even in action movies, are not allowed to like sustain injuries and like have their perfect flawless skin be all messed up, and I like, you see them with like all these scrapes,
unless it's like motivation for somebody to like avenge them,
right? Like, unless she's like fridged,
like you get a cut on your face and it's like, who did this to you? Like, I must go murder them.
I will destroy them.
Totally right. But again, movie doesn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that is like handled super well. Another thing that I liked of the way this movie goes with it is the Harley breakup, where, again, I think like a lesser movie would have really let that take over the movie and let it take over her character, but I feel like it's handled in a really, like, it's not ignored, which and you see she's getting out of this like the most toxic relationship of all time,
literally.
I like that she doesn't handle it well. That felt like a nod to reality. Yeah. Getting out of a toxic relationship is fucking horrible. And I like that she acts out, you know, like she gets a shitty haircut, she gets a pet, she does like all the things that you do when you're getting out of and then you do this big cathartic. Like, I liked that she went through that process that felt like closer to reality than a lot of things that happen in the movie. And then you kind of get to just have her have her story, and the focus is not like, I need to get over this guy, which a lesser movie could have done. And I think that, like, honestly, if you had most male screenwriters on this story, where they would have lingered too long. But I like that it's, I like how it's handled, and I like how you're kind of like, okay, and we're moving on.
Yeah, and all before the opening credits, like, or the title card, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, the plant blows up, and then you have the Birds of Prey title card, and you've basically run through the whole breakup, getting over. I mean, like, obviously, like, she has to figure out a purpose in life and everything. Like, that's what the rest of it is about. But it isn't about her pining after him or, you know, feeling weird about it or something. Like, she's never, like, looking back on the breakup or anything.
Right.
And I like that she's not looking back. Like, and I like that the movie doesn't look back at her canon too hard, because it's like, her canon is sexist. It's like she couldn't, like, this woman with a PhD, like, you know, just met a guy and then abandoned her entire life. Like, it's,
yeah,
I like that they just take the essence of who this character is and then they just like run with it in a completely different direction.
I will say though, I mean, women with PhDs can ruin their lives over men too. Like,
true.
I mean, I don't have a PhD. I'm not speaking from experience, but I'm just saying it is not the domain of non-PhD holding women.
For sure.
Well, I mean, that kind of brings me to another point of something I really like about this movie is women being allowed to be anti-heroes. And like, so it's like an R-rated movie. We see pretty graphic violence. We see women doing things that, you know, polite society would consider to be unladylike. But there are all these like women who are rough around the edges. They partake in very morally questionable activities. And I really enjoy seeing that because so often women are held to this standard of like, you have to be perfect. You can't misbehave. Like, you can't be unladylike. But we see women swearing, stealing, fighting, killing people, drinking, like the scene where Harley Quinn sort of does cocaine, like all this stuff. I really, and I'm not like necessarily condoning these activities in real life.
Oh, no, it sounds like you are. It sounds like you're telling everybody.
Do cocaine.
Actually, please, everyone, go out and pickpocket and do cocaine and break people's legs. Please and thank you.
You should shoplift and smoke weed. Like,
it's actually like politically good.
That's actually kind of
you should not pay back your student loans.
Yeah.
And you should not pay your medical bills.
I also love that one-off line where Harley is like, and that's why you don't pay federal or state income taxes. There's so many good, like, I like that she's like low-key an anarchist too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, but she did go out to vote for Bernie. Yep. So, you know, feeling seen.
I love the image of her like standing in line at the polls. Like, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Also, like, they're always able to kind of skirt around it a little bit, but like, where is Gotham then in the United States of America if she voted in a primary for Bernie?
That's true. Oh, wow. Yeah, they canonically put Gotham in America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Within the United States in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's another thing that I like about, and this is the only other comparison I will make of this movie to the only other two recent female superhero movies. But I feel like a strength of this movie is, as opposed to Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman, Harley Quinn lives in this world. She understands it. She does not need someone to hold her hand and be like, this is this, and this is this, and this is this, which to varying extents happens in Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, where Captain Marvel is out of time, Wonder Woman is out of place, and they have to be guided through this world, whereas like, this is Harley's turf.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't need to be told what anything is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Like, I think, I don't know, there are things to like about Wonder Woman, a couple of things, and I do think that there is space for one of these sorts of movies where it is just about like a radical optimist like winning out, which is basically what that movie is. But I also appreciate that this movie is basically the inverse of that, where it's just like, what if a piece of shit could be a superhero instead of like, what if the purest person in the world could be? Because like, that's not just a woman thing in superhero movies. That's like all, like, I don't even know, I can't think of another superhero, male or female, who like gets drunk in any
Hancock?
Of these movies.
Hancock.
Oh, Hancock. Good pull. I stand corrected.
Yeah. No, I don't know if I actually saw Hancock, but he isn't, the whole idea with him is like, he's like not a good guy, but he's also a superhero. Yeah.
He's like down on his luck or something. Like, he's like a failed superhero, but he still has his powers. So yeah, that's true. Okay.
Well, yeah, that's Hancock erasure, Emily.
I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say that Suicide Squad, they surely some of those, you know, bad characters must get up to some sort of morally questionable activities. Like,
yeah, they're forced into a situation where they all have to be good guys, like fighting for a greater cause, but they're all deep down bad guys.
You mean like some kind of Suicide Squad? That's all that I know about Suicide Squad, is that Will Smith says, You mean like some kind of Suicide Squad?
Indeed says the name of the movie in a very corny, on-the-nose line of dialogue in the movie. Correct.
Woohoo!
Great.
Oh, and the one other thing, the one, I think my last thing that I liked plot-wise, as much as I was kind of like eye-rolly at the team-up scene right before the amazing fight sequence, I like that they don't automatically all remain best friends after, that they have that scene where they like give each other their due, and then you see them split off in a way that feels more logical based on what we know about the characters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, it makes sense that Cassandra is going to stay with Harley and that they're going to be a team. And it also makes a lot of sense that Harley doesn't want to be a part of the Birds of Prey and that she thinks it's kind of
lame. She's like, those fucking dorky do-gooders.
I like that, yeah.
How it feels on brand, yeah.
But there's, you know, mutual respect and shit like that. Like, I thought that was, like, a cool...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't have to all move into a loft together or something.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Sort of
yeah.
sitcom.
I have a list of just a few kind of random things that I really enjoyed. The soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. And I think mostly, if not all, female artists on the soundtrack.
I believe so.
I know that. Yeah. Yeah.
The pretty diverse cast in terms of the five main female characters. Three of them are women of color. It's a woman of color who directed this movie, Kathy Yan. The writer of the movie is a woman named Christina Hodson. She is mixed. So we have, you know, the voices of women of color.
She also wrote Bumblebee.
Yes, and I didn't know that at first, and then I found out she had also written Bumblebee.
Well, I was like, what a fun fact.
And I was like, oh, that's why I didn't hate Bumblebee. Like, that's why I thought it was sort of, because I went in being like, oh, this is a Transformers movie. It's going to be bad. But then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I actually liked this. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Because, like,
Christina
good screenwriter
writes
wrote it.
Fun movies.
Yeah. I really like it when Harley Quinn psychoanalyzes people and like uses her like psychiatrist background.
Yeah.
I just like those moments where, you know, she's using her degree, baby. Ali Wong is in the movie.
Yeah.
She's great.
Love a good comedian and a bit part.
I know. There is a moment in the movie where Roman is talking to Harley Quinn and he says, "If you want mercy, shut that hole in the middle of your face." Which is not...
That's Titanic. I wrote that down.
I know. The crew member on the Titanic's like, there'll be one less on this boat if you don't shut that hole in your face.
And Kathy Bates is like, oh, just said that to Kathy Bates. I had that note as well.
I knew you would.
I've seen Titanic many times and I did not make that pull. That's hilarious.
Oh. Anything that is even dialogue adjacent to Titanic.
We notice. There's another Titanic similarity with like the diamond being used as a like quasi MacGuffin. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So when the map is in the diamond and the diamond's in the kid, it's
the
like when
the
he
diamond.
Put the diamond in
the
coat,
coat on
and then
her.
He put the coat on her.
I put the diamond in the kid.
I put the map in the diamond. That's just imagine Billy Zane performing that.
Incredible.
That's very good.
Someone should let Billy Zane be in a superhero movie again.
Right?
I will say one other, like, another just general thing that I like about this movie, which might be, like, controversial, but I think that especially during this last fight sequence, especially, I kind of sense, like, oh, this didn't have a very big budget compared to most of these things. And it's true, like I think it was like it was under 100,
it was I think 81 or 82 million dollar budget.
Yeah, the Wonder Woman budget was considered low for a superhero movie, and that was like 125, I want to say. So it is like they do lowball these first standalone female superhero movies, I think, like in a very sexist way, like they give them a lot less money than a similar film featuring a male superhero would. But I personally like the embrace of being a lower budget film, like through like all the action sequence stuff, like we were talking about, being a much more kind of chop-socky martial arts Jackie Chan-esque kind of film just felt very appropriate for it. And I like that embrace of, I wouldn't even call it like an embrace of a limitation, because I think it's just like figuring out what kind of movie can work at that level and not trying to stretch it, like really feeling at home at that budget level and recognizing like what is required by the story. And I actually like that a lot. Like next time out, I hope that she gets more money. Mm-hmm. She being Kathy Ann, if she comes back to direct it, and the character of Harley Quinn. But but in general, I thought that's another thing that felt really refreshing about it to me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Does anyone have any other thoughts?
Well, now that, because I didn't realize that Cassandra Cain was going to be Batgirl, but like, I really hope that that happens now.
I kind of, like, that was after I read the canon, I'm like, I hope that this canon becomes relevant in future movies.
Right.
We find out who maybe her birth parents were, or I don't know.
If they're doing like a Marvel-esque, like phase one, phase two, or whatever, like in maybe if 10 years down the road, we'll see.
I guess we'll see if a female-led franchise will ever be allowed multiple phases.
Yeah, true.
I don't know.
We have to have grumpy Asian Batgirl, though. Come on, for the people. I need it so badly.
Sign me up.
Well, Kathy Yan has already said in an interview that she does want to direct a sequel. She wants to do it, and she wants to explore Harley's relationship with Poison Ivy in the next movie. So I guess that we would see her and Cassandra driving on to the next adventure, which I kind of wonder if there is a future for this franchise, and I hope there is. Like, how will the Birds of Prey still be there? Will they just get their own separate movie, which I feel like is maybe a smarter move? I don't know.
Well,
I hope that we get to find out.
If you look on IMDb at the time of this recording, for Margot Robbie's upcoming projects as an actor,
she produced the movie too. I forgot to say that.
She produced it.
She's like as far as like stars who are also producers, I think she's like doing a bang up job as a producer recently. Like, she uses her power very well, I think.
Definitely. And this movie wouldn't have even happened if it weren't for her going to the studio and being like, I want a Harley Quinn movie. I want it to be R-rated, and I want it to be like a girl group movie, like an ensemble female-led narrative. Yeah. So like, she was like instrumental in this movie even existing. And then, you know, the writer was brought on, and then Kathy Yan was hired. So like, it's all thanks to Margot Robbie that this movie even exists.
Yeah.
But here's something that might be disappointing, or it might not even be real. But at the time of this recording, if you go onto IMDb in her like announced projects, upcoming projects, there is an untitled Joker/Harley Quinn project.
No.
So if they put her back together with Joker,
it's just rumored.
I know, it's just rumored. Yeah. It might not be real, or this might just be like the Harley Quinn project that will be like a direct sequel to Birds of Prey. Hard to say. But if they do have it be like a weird like romantic story with Joker, I'm just like, ugh.
But then there's also Gotham City Sirens. That has been announced, where she's listed as Harley Quinn in that as well.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So there's like, she's got two things where she's listed as Harley Quinn that have just been announced. Of those two, I would much prefer Gotham City Sirens. Let's see who is attached to it. Mostly, I am excited to see Margot Robbie as Barbie. And that is something that I am genuinely thrilled about. Because Greta Gerwig is going to direct a Barbie movie
for
with Margot
real?
Robbie. That's fine by me.
Right, everybody.
That'll be a thing I didn't know I needed.
I hope she doesn't. Well, you know, it could be something that's very easy to fuck up as well. We'll see. Okay, Gotham City Sirens is listed as following three of Gotham City's most notorious female criminals on one of their most dangerous missions yet. Star Margot Robbie, director James Gunn, writer... Geneva Robertson-Dworet, who wrote Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone have anything else they want to say about Birds of Prey?
I don't think so. I was very happy to watch it in quarantine. Just great, great activity. Highly recommend it.
It's a great quarantine movie.
Let's figure out if the movie passes the bird duel test. Don't know why I'm bringing this bit back.
As far as I can tell, it doesn't pass the bird test.
I don't know.
No birds.
I'm hoping that our mentions are flooded and there's a bird we forgot. And then if it passes, I mean, what a miracle it would be.
What about the egg and the sandwich?
That was a future bird that didn't get to be a bird.
okay, you know what? It passes.
Let's cut our losses. It passes.
Because life begins before conception, apparently, yeah. In the case of an egg sandwich.
Yeah, we're pro-life. This is a pro-life podcast. It only passes the bird test if you're pro-life.
Right, but like super pro-life, like kind of cosmically so pro-life, like where every ovum is
a future a baby.
Like purchasing a billboard pro-life.
Oh my gosh. Anywho, does it pass the Bechdel test?
Yes.
Yeah. Lots.
A lot of times.
Many times over.
Many different combinations of characters as well.
Which is also kind of like for something that starts off as a breakup movie, very like it's a cool trick mm-hmm. to pull. That like really it stops being stops being about that pretty fast. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about her emancipation from it. Mm-hmm. So as far as our nipple scale goes, 0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women, I would honestly, maybe this is too generous, but I would give this like a 4.5 out of 5. You get to see women who aren't perfect. I feel like that's a trope that gets used too much. When people don't really know how to write female characters, they just write them to be these perfect, flawless specimens. But, you know, the characters we see in this movie, they are flawed, like, you know, real people are, which yeah. makes them feel more realistic, despite this movie being very cartoony. A few characters are identifiably queer, Harley Quinn and Renee Montoya and Ali Wong's character. But it's not the only thing we know about those characters, especially for Harley Quinn and Renee. In fact, maybe we could stand to learn more about their queer identities. But either way, to me, it felt like their queerness was pretty normalized by the narrative rather than, you know, a big to-do being made about it. So I enjoyed that aspect of their kind of backstory and character development. Also, the fact that you have a lot of diversity on screen and behind the camera is great. I think that this movie, it came in with an agenda to like be a feminist text. And I think it does a really good job in subverting a lot of tropes and just letting us see like cool kick-ass women be awesome and beat the shit out of and or kill a bunch of really horrible men. So there's, for me, a lot to love. So yeah, I'll give it 4.5 out of 5. And I'll kind of disperse that evenly between the 5 main female characters: Harley Quinn, Cassandra Cain, Black Canary, Renee Montoya, and the Huntress.
I'm going to go, whenever I get into like fourth, so you're just like, what are you doing? I guess I'm going to give it 4.25, mm-hmm. maybe 4. I don't know. Maybe 4 feels too, I don't know. Okay. The point is that's what they need to update our Wikipedia page, but whatever. but I think that this movie, I mean, it is by far my favorite female driven superhero movie of this new generation of them that I'm seeing. And I think that, I mean, just for listeners.
So you're not including Catwoman in this.
I'm not. No, that's, I think that is
feminist text, Catwoman starring
an absolutely feminist text. I mean, I really, really liked this movie a lot. There's so much to love about it. My gripes are very specific and little. I do think that there is just like, there are too many characters to the point where we don't get to know characters that we should know. And I think that very likely has to do with the way that people, and by people, I mean people who fund movies, regard, you know, they just get insecure about just letting a woman lead a movie. Because if she does get to lead a movie, she needs a man to hold her hand through the world. And if she doesn't need someone to hold her hand, then they just kind of like overloaded it with too many characters. This would have been 3 amazing movies, but it is one movie that I really like. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the best. I love Cassandra Cain. I want to see more of her. I want to see more of her cast. I want to know more about her.
Give her 2 broken arms next time. 2 casts.
How'd she break that arm? I would love if just like
the cast is just like a fixture of her. It's never addressed and she just always has a broken arm. But yeah, I like Margot Robbie's, I like Margot Robbie. I like this take on Harley Quinn where it acknowledges her past, but it doesn't define her by it, which is such a common frustrating mistake. So, and also, yeah, the fact that like women made this movie and women made this movie happen is the best. So yeah, I'll give it a 4.25 and I'll give them all to Rosie Perez. Do with them what she may.
Who, her whole backstory is that like her former partner slash current captain at her precinct keeps stealing credit for like cases she solved, and then she's just like, fuck you, dude. And then she goes off and becomes a bird of prey.
Yeah, she gets to quit her job because now Mary Elizabeth Winstead is just like bankrolling the operation. So now she probably makes a six-figure salary and it's like really chilling.
Yep. Emily, what about you?
I know. I was just thinking about, I was having the same thought process about the 4 versus 4.5 because 4 does feel low, but for the same reason that you said, Jamie, like I do think it eludes getting a 5 just because of its busyness. I think it could do better justice to fewer characters, but yeah, I think because of the origins of it, I think it, and the fact that it is so driven by women's perspectives, I'll echo the 4.25. I'm copying you. Yeah, which is great. Like that's, I mean, I don't think that the other female superhero movies that I've seen would come close to that. Maybe like a 3 at best. I really haven't cared for any of them that have come out so far. So
I'm kind of interested. Caitlin, I almost want to like revisit Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel at some later time.
I think we scored them pretty high, but at least for Wonder Woman especially, like that was,
I wouldn't score Wonder Woman what I did.
Yeah,
today.
We did that quite some time ago, and I think we would, you know, maybe it's worth a revisit.
And then we grew up.
Right. Yeah, we got smarter. We did the podcast for a few more years and then we knew more stuff. But I mean, considering that we give most movies that we cover on the podcast don't get higher than like an average of 2 nipples, like most movies we give 1 or 0. So like, yeah. The fact that this gets like 4 or above is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when I'm thinking about those other films too, it's like, it's about them becoming a part of like a military or somewhat military organization, and that's the victory for them.
Right.
Like women can fight in World War I too, like a horrible war that I have very little interest in.
But 1917 like, is a great film.
George Mackay is strutting his cute little butt through that war.
I didn't see 1917. I just can't.
Oh my God,
I am
allergic to, obsessed with it. I
gotta
can't
see George Mackay's butt in that war. It's
just the butt. But in general, like I did also appreciate that this film, you know, if it is going to be a girl power, female centric superhero movie, it's not about like being a part of a military or the cops. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of about anarchy, which feels fun.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining us and being here with us today. What would you like to plug? How can people follow you, etc.?
You can listen to the podcast that I co-host with Tess Lynch and Molly Lambert. It's called Night Call. It's on this here podcast network, and it comes out every Monday. You can also find me on Twitter at Emily Yoshida, where I do still regretfully make tweets every now and again. And that is it right now. Yeah.
Awesome. Yes. Listen to Night Call. And you can follow us on social media. You can go to our Patreon, aka Matreon. If you're running out of main feed episodes in the quarantine and you need some more.
Which many
more, the Matreon's a great place for you. It's patreon.com/spectralcast, and it gets you 2 bonus episodes a month. You'll have access to the entire backlog, which is over 60 episodes. Yeah, so check that out.
Check out our Tee Public?
Mm-mm.
tpublic.com/thebechtelcast if you want to wear Bechtelcast stuff in quarantine
And yeah, we love you so much.
Yes, thanks for listening.
Stay safe out there.
Stay safe and be well. And
don't do cocaine.
Don't. No. Unless you want to. Caitlin, your body, your choice.
Not endorse cocaine for the last time.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.